Glad you're here this morning. If you're new here, welcome. We always see some new faces kind of coming in along with all our regulars. You're all welcome, but I just like to give an extra special welcome to our newcomers. Come on in. So one thing that happens for the teachers, so often with the staff too, we get together. And whether it's in a meeting during the week or coffee or beer after hours, we start kind of, it very easily happens. We start ruminating, talking, discussing different themes and topics, something we've been reading. And before long, we're headlong engaged over some kind of challenge to our spiritual journey, whatever, and it will be hours in. Well, sometimes it'll happen on the golf course, and we're back and forth, pushing back on different ideas and disagreeing with each other. But anyways, after it's all said and done, you go, wow, that was fantastic. That, there was some learning behind there that got me thinking, and I often have come away from some of those gatherings going, I wish I would have taped that. Or I wish we could tape it and make it available to some people, because I think there's some people on the spiritual journey that could have used that conversation.
It's funny, the other day we were chatting and Carmen said afterwards, said, you guys, like, do you ever shut up? Like, it just goes on and on and on. And there's always more to say. Then we get to the door and, like, we must have been 15 minutes in the door finishing up another thought, you know. But I think it's interesting because there's a distinction between having a discussion about something, which is from the root word percussion, which has the idea of bouncing an idea off each other, and then having a dialogue. So we use the word dialogue very intentionally, which is two words, two Greek words. One is dia, which means through, and the other one's logos, which is the word. So when the word goes through you, there's a transformational piece about that. Mm-hmm. And so it's not, you know, I often say that it's in those discussions that as teachers that we gain so much from that, and it's transformational for us in terms of our own our own journey.
So. Yeah. So this morning we want to kind of riff off of some stuff that we've been talking about, and you know, it's not spontaneous, but it's stuff that's been top of mind over the last while, especially as pertaining to this series.
It could actually be very spontaneous, which makes Jeff very nervous.
Oh, yeah. So, years ago, early 2000s, give or take, I made a huge mistake. All the technology startups, there's a pile of them that were kind of surfacing out of Silicon Valley. And for anyone that was active in the financial markets at that time, this will ring a bell. But it was like hype. I mean, if you think Bitcoin has been hyped, the tech startups of that day were crazy. Mm-hmm. And the stock markets, like these stocks would show up one day and it would just skyrocket. And so I was talking with a bunch of friends, and they were investing some money, and boom, they were experiencing some crazy things. I thought, wow, that sounds like a great idea. And so I pulled some money out of some very secure investments that Kathy and I had made, and I started dabbling in these tech stocks, probably to my detriment. I bought in on a couple that did very well. In fact, within like only a matter of a couple of weeks, I had doubled my money. I sold. And then I thought, wow, that's easy. This is pretty incredible. So then now I'm all in, right? I'm pushing in. I'm like, wow, do you realize how much money we can make doing this? And I remember telling Kathy, like, Kathy, hello. Then I took more money, bought more stocks, other things that I'd heard. Before long, I had taken a large chunk of our retirement, moved it into the prospect of making some monster money. And what seems like only days later, it was probably over the course of a number of months, the tech stock sector bubble that had built popped. and all the hype came to an end. In fact, it was the opposite. There was negative momentum, and investors panicked and started selling like crazy. Tech stock market dived, and Kathy and I lost all that money. I'm a pastor. I'm not in this for the money. But we didn't have a lot of money. And I mean, this was hard-earned years of painfully monthly investing that we had made into these secure funds. It was a large chunk of it. I remember the moment when I came to the realization that it was gone. It wasn't coming back. And I thought, I can't tell Kathy. I mean, the number of times she looked at me and said, Jeff, are you sure about this? And I'd look at her and say, why can't you just trust me? I know what I'm doing. And in my head, I'm going, oh my God, what is she going to do when she finds out? What will she say? And I played that out in my head so many different ways. Bad. I thought, no, I can't tell her. You know, at different times in all of our lives, we'll likely find ourselves in that difficult place of desperately needing a compassionate response from someone. Someone to look into your eyes and go, hey, it's okay. We're going to get through this. Or, I'm going to help you. Or, I forgive you. This compassionate response. What you have now, or you're going to, there will be inevitably some personal failure, some struggle that you don't want someone to find out about. Maybe a relationship of yours will tank, and there will be other people that you don't want to know because you're fearful how they're going to respond. Maybe it's a career that will go on the rocks, a wild weekend gone wrong. I mean, we will have our moments, our opportunities, when we're sitting there going, oh, I need someone right now. I need a particular person. I need this family member. I need my dad, whatever. And I don't need them to react this way. I need them to react this way. What is also likely is that at some point you will end up on the other side of that equation. You will end up being Kathy, where you will observe someone else's mistake. You'll see them do something, and they will be reaching out to you. Perhaps you will end up being a victim of their mistake, and they'll be looking to you for compassion. I'm telling you, those two perspectives, two completely different experiences.
So there's a great illustration of that in the Bible. And how many of you here, if I say the story of the prodigal son, you've heard that before? Okay. So a good number of us, right? And my fear, or my concern in sharing that story this morning is that we miss the radical nature of the story. So the story goes like this. Young son, Jewish family, says to his dad, look, I'd like my inheritance now, before you die, which was a very derogatory way of taking that which was going to be yours, but was not yours yet. The father gave him his inheritance. He goes away, the narrative says, to a far-off land, spends it on what they call wild living. It doesn't define what that is, but just wild living. And you fill in the blank there. For some of you, that means one thing. For for others, it may be a little more conservative. But whatever wild living is for you, as an as an alcoholic, that leaves the sky's the limit for me. So on that one, runs out of money, and in that moment, it's an interesting narrative because in the moment that he runs out of money, he also the land has a drought. And so there's the starvation in the land. And he ends up, and it's a great symbol, metaphorically, he ends up feeding the pigs at this guy's place, which if you're Jewish, obviously feeding pigs is not the top of your career choice, right? So in terms of the metaphor around that, so pork not being able to be eaten and being kind of an unclean animal, and here he is eating with the pigs. And so you get the idea. In that moment, he says, even the servants at home have a better life. I'm going to go back home to my dad and see if there's any chance of reconciliation. And he does that. And there's a beautiful image there of when he comes to the gate, the narrative says, can I get some water?
Thank you.
Please, thank you. So there's this beautiful narrative. The father sees him from a long way away, and in that moment doesn't really process it, but responds and runs to the lost son. Now, this is in the context of another story about a lost sheep, a lost coin, and then the lost son. And immediately he runs towards him, embraces him, kills the fatted calf, puts a ring on his finger, and demonstrates, like you're saying, that compassion for the lost son. And he says, my son was lost and now he's found.
Thanks, Rod. That was very compassionate of you. That was nice.
A lot of compassion here. The rest of you are watching me dying up here. Okay. So what we miss in this, and this is my fear in sharing that narrative, is that the radical nature of God being seen in that father role. Because up until that point, the gods had to be appeased. There was a sacrificial system. There was this sense that they didn't understand the weather systems, and so there was this, we had to appease the gods. God was angry and fire from heaven, and, you know, our God has to be powerful, and if somehow we can have access to name our God, then we can have power over the other communities, right? And so we, it's kind of spring training for them. Instead of throwing baseballs, they would go to war, and there was this domination, my God's more powerful than your God, and there was that context. And so a God showing compassion, mm-hmm. being there, running out. There's a really radical nature to that piece that I think for us today, we become immune to. Mm-hmm. And so this idea that God would somehow be compassionate, that's really, really, really different. Mm-hmm.
There's Jesus saying, you have a perception of God. God is actually might be a lot different than that. But then he goes and takes it a step further. One day he's asked, how many times am I supposed to forgive someone that's hurt me? Like, what do you think? This guy asked Jesus, what do you think? Like, seven times? Is that about it? Jesus looks at him and goes, try 70 times seven. And they're looking at him going, are you kidding me? What's interesting is then he continues. He says, I tell you this, love your enemies. Help and give without any expectation of return. He says, you'll never, I promise you, regret it. Live out this God-created identity. And last week, Tom talked about this kingdom of God mentality, this picture, this world that Jesus envisioned of the way it should be, the way God would want it, as he understood it. He said, live out this God-created identity the way our Father lives toward us. Again, this reference to this God as Father. He says, generously and graciously, even when we're at our worst, our Father is kind, so you be kind. A lot of translations say, be compassionate, just as your Father is compassionate. I mean, of all the spiritual behaviors that you could engage in that have been spoken about, it would seem that Jesus saw the act of compassion as one of the fundamental ingredients of the kingdom of God. He saw it as something that would change both the person giving it, acting in it, but also it would change the world in which you were living. It would change the lives of people around you. Is Marcus Borg, a wonderful author and scholar that I love. He said that the way Jesus spoke of compassion would suggest that he saw it not only as the primary quality of God, he saw it as really the primary quality of any truly spiritual person. He was going, you think you're spiritual? Show me your compassion quotient. That is the proof in the pudding.
You can tell a lot about the different cultures that we're from, and I think this is important in seeing the difference. For example, the Eastern culture sees life quite differently from the Western culture. The Western culture, if you look at our fairy tales are the poor person becoming wealthy, kind of the Cinderella, you know, this poverty, making it, marrying the prince. In Eastern culture, their fairy tales are quite different, where the wealthy person gives up everything and becomes poor and finds joy and finds happiness that way. And they've actually done experiments about this in terms of psychology, where they've asked people to think about happiness. And in the Eastern context, they think about, how can I help others? And they're actually happier because they're thinking about happiness. In a Western culture, what people think about having happiness is having more, getting more.
Right.
And at the end of the experiment, they actually feel sadder because they compare themselves more with the people that have more than we do. And so it's, we see it in terms of accumulation. The West sees it in terms of letting go, which leads me to this quote, which says, the Dalai Lama said this, if you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. And there's this Eastern sense in which we give that, right? There's a generosity of spirit that we can give. And giving, I'll be honest, giving compassion is just not that easy, and it's not simple.
No.
Right? I mean, I wish I could say, hey, this is the easy one. It's not easy.
No.
It is difficult. And here's why, because when we talk about compassion, we really bump into ourselves. We bump into our own, I bump into my prejudices. I bump into my own laziness, because to be compassionate requires that I need to get up and be active. I got to get off my seat and do something. It's not just a name. It's kind of, you know, there's an action that's required. And I think people, especially with, you know, the gun violence that's happened south of the border, people are saying, we're tired of you saying, you know, our prayers are with you.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Right.
You know, and compassion is the same thing. It's like, what are you going to do? You can't just talk about it. You actually have to engage in compassion. It was a good illustration. I was invited a couple of years ago to participate in a walk for charity. And it was a end result, a good walk, a good idea. But it was from a different faith. And it was from a Muslim friend of mine, and they invited me to come on this walk. And I found myself finding excuses to get out of doing the walk. And it wasn't a conscious level. It was just this underlying, well, we don't believe the same stuff. And there was this prejudice that came up. And I didn't see it in the moment, but I found a good excuse not to do it. And
sure.
I justified it in my head because I didn't want to do that walk. Because
huh.
It wasn't a Christian walk, you know. It was a Muslim walk, you know.
Wow.
And I'm going, wow. And I didn't even
wow.
see that. And
no.
It was, and that's why I say compassion's
that's
not
brutal.
Easy.
That is brutal. I'm sorry. That is the truth, though. I appreciate you sharing that, because sometimes you don't even see
yeah.
the prejudices that are getting in the way of our ability to do an act.
Wasn't as bad as losing all my inheritance, though. Just saying.
Oh.
It's just,
know,
the vulnerability. I just want you to know the vulnerability here is tenuous. You know,
I'm sitting here poking fun. I struggle feeling compassion sometimes in the worst possible moments. We had a block party. Our block has a block party every year, and just a little over under a year ago,
mm-hmm.
we were all getting together, and it was Saturday night. Sunday morning, next morning, I was going to have to speak, and so I told Kathy, I don't want to be out late. And so, just so you know, I'm going to be leaving. You know, I was telling her that. She goes, like, come on, lighten up. Come on out. So we're having this time, and I'm kind of watching the clock, and I'm thinking about some stuff that I have to do, and I'm getting ready to leave. It's about that time. I'm starting to say goodbyes to everyone, and Kathy and the boys are still having a good time, and they're like, all right, whatever, see you. This lady comes up. She's a neighbor from a few doors down, and she starts asking me some questions about Friends Church. And I'm like, really? Like, why now? It's late. Now, I didn't say that, but Kathy thought my body language was screaming it. And so she was, I said, well, you know what, you can check the website. I was trying to be kind, but I was like, okay, I've already overstayed and I got stuff to do. And so anyway, she's kind of roundabout. And then she starts talking to me about her spiritual journey and a couple little things. And I'm like, huh. And I'm distracted, obviously. And she's like, you know what, I'm sorry. I know it's late and you're going to go. And I said, well, hey, you know what, we'll have to pick this up. And so I'm leaving. Actually, Kathy decided to come, and we packed up some of her stuff, and I'm walking back, and Kathy said, I got the sense that she was wanting to talk about something, or, you know, she just seemed, and I remember looking at Kathy, it's like, Kath, I'm off the clock, all right? Like, I can't be on all the time, and maybe she did, but I go home and I don't even think about it, not another thing about it, until 3 weeks ago. And I'm out on a walk with her dog and I run into her. And she's walking her dog. I go, hey, it's great to see you. And I haven't seen your husband, Chris. Where's he been? She said, well, we're separated. So what? Like, this just happened? She goes, no, it's about a year ago. Really? I said, I hadn't heard anything. She says, well, it's just, I want to talk to you, Jeff, but I just couldn't find the right time. And she didn't bring up the block party, but I am doing the math. I'm going, she was lining me up to be able to. That sick feeling of going, oh man, Jeff, too busy. Busyness is an enemy. Compassion, isn't it? Have you found that? You're staring straight into the eyes of an issue, and you're going, you know what? Not my problem, not right now. Too much is going on. Mm-hmm. You're on the way to work, and you see someone, you're going, I really know, got to go. Sometimes it's not busyness. Sometimes it's like this judgmental stuff, right? You see the issue going on. You see the person perhaps in need. They say something. They hint to something. You're going, But then in the back of your mind, you're going, well, you know what? You're getting what you deserve.
And you kind of get this compassion fatigue almost. You know, it's almost like you have that going on and then you get different pieces that go across your TV screen. And, you know, it's like, okay, what's the next thing and the next thing? And you get this kind of compassion fatigue. Yeah. And when it requires something of you, you know, so our prejudices, our busyness, you know, the judgmental piece that we've got. And I think Jesus addresses that. There's another, story that he tells about the Samaritan. You know, and so all of these religious people walk past and don't help, but the one who helped was the Samaritan, the one that we have judgments about. But the interesting piece for me about that is the Samaritan didn't take the beggar or the robber, the guy who'd been robbed and stripped of his clothes, didn't take him home with him. Took him to an inn, paid for him, and went on his way. So there's a certain practicality to that you've got boundaries as well as, you know,
which adds complexion, complexity to this, eh?
Yeah. And I, you know, if you talk to people that are paramedics, I think the average kind of job expectancy for a paramedic is somewhere between 7 and 9 years. They just get compassion fatigue, right? Because of being, it's almost like post-traumatic stress over and over and over and over again. And it's like, what do I do with all of this? You know, the healthcare workers that we work with a lot with First Nations, they're seeing so much that they burn out, right? Hmm. Because your compassion quotient is used up in a sense, right? Hmm.
I'd like to think that that is my problem at any given time. And I wonder if sometimes that isn't, you know, for most of us.
If it's not an excuse, then yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I think it would be easy, you know, to kind of lean on that as an excuse. I don't know.
Well, it's not easy, and it's not simple. That's the piece.
No, it's not.
So let me flip this one last time here. So, you know, we're starting by saying that there's a story of prodigal, and you know this compassion that we see God in, and which is a really radical shift.
Yeah,
and He wants us to be compassionate. Mm-hmm. So, how many would identify with the statement that it's really the person that's most difficult to be compassionate upon is yourself? You get that, and it is. That's where I get caught up.
Yeah.
So you know I. So my daughter's getting married this summer in about 11 weeks from now. And the reason I know it's 11 weeks because I have it planned to lose the appropriate amount of weight so I don't look like a fatty on that day, right? But so I'll go to a restaurant, and I'll be sitting at the restaurant, and, you know, so I had salmon yesterday. And so the server will say, will that be salad or fries?
How many know that question? That's
you ever heard that question before?
Hate that.
I'm going, why do they ask that question?
Yeah.
You know, and so I'll say fries more often than I say salad. And then afterwards, you know, you're trying on a shirt or you're trying on a pair of pants or you get on the scale or whatever it is. And in that moment, the self-loathing and the anger at yourself, and then you call yourself whatever name is in the mirror and you beat yourself up, and there's that lack of compassion on yourself, you know, the black belt and self-defeat that just kind of warmth, there it is, and I can take me out of the game.
Yeah,
right? And so I think that, you know, this whole idea of compassion and seeing God as compassionate, right, it really does kind of hit to the very core of our being in that sense.
You know, if compassion is the game, or if it's such a large part of the game, the question is how can we become stronger in this suit? And we began kind of chatting about different strategies. How do you cultivate the heart of compassion, even in a community like this? How can you make yourself care about needs and people and even yourself in a more sincere and genuine and effective way that gets you actually doing something versus making excuses and then hating yourself later for not doing what you should? I just want to talk about this for a second because for me, I honestly do believe that the compassion is it's kind of a strong measuring post of what's going on in my spiritual journey.
Mm.
And when I take my temperature and I'm not registering anything in terms of my compassion quotient, I might be kidding myself in terms of what I'm doing. So I'm very serious about saying, how do I lift this up? How do I start giving a rip about situations around me and even in me?
It's kind of like your spirituality becomes invasive on my comfort.
Sure it is.
It becomes an uncomfortable conversation.
I think Jesus was addressing that in his day.
Mm-hmm.
Again and again. He's looking at the religious community and he's going, right now you're just heaping a load of expectations on the people here and you don't give a rip about what they really need. And so they were all about following these rules. He's going, no, 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 you're missing it. It is about helping these people. He would tell parable after parable. He's going, but you ignored these people. No, no, but you didn't feed them. No, no, but you didn't care. And his whole message was, you have lost the plot completely. So at some point, you got to go, okay, if that is the case, I need to be focused on what is going to raise this up. Can we just talk about something that does that? What does do that? What does make you give a rip about some of those situations around you? They talk a lot about cultivating empathy. This is really an important piece in this conversation.
It is.
How do you feel? You know what empathy? It's this ability to look into someone's life and go, oh, this is what they're struggling with. This is what they're feeling right now. Oh, this is the fear that person is gripped by. This is what's going on in their life. I get it. Did you know you can actually cultivate empathy? That you can actually help yourself be able to look into someone else's lives and know what they're feeling? There's practices you can do. Let's just do this for a second. Pick someone right now in your life. Someone close to you. Someone you love. Who you think might need some compassion. Maybe they're just going through something. I want you to just take a moment right now. Get that person's picture in your mind. Maybe it's a friend. Maybe it's a coworker. Maybe it's an extra. Someone's close that you care about. Just start thinking right now. Try to imagine some pain that they're feeling right now. We have a family member whose husband is going through cancer treatment right now, and she is in the hospital every day. Mm-hmm. I just practiced this morning. Mm-hmm. I began to imagine the fatigue she's feeling, the loneliness. She's sitting in this hospital room, disconnected from her normal world, caring for her husband, who mm-hmm. we're not sure is. So I just imagine thinking about this. It's funny, in only a matter of minutes, I just began to imagine the suffering in as much detail as I could. How she must feel as people are reaching out to her who might not actually even be coming and visiting. The idle words, the resentment that may be building. The worry about life at home and what's not happening, the house that's messed up. I want you to just take a moment to just get into the shoes, the size 11 and a half of someone in your life for a second. This is cultivates empathy. Mm-hmm. Now, did you know you can do this for someone who you don't want to give empathy and compassion toward? Because mm-hmm. it's very easy for someone you love. But Jesus upped the game. He said, love someone you hate. Love someone who isn't willing to love you back. Mm-hmm. This is where compassion and all mm-hmm. our excuses yeah. weigh in on the floor. They talk about ways to even cultivate it for them. Here's some questions. Try to imagine the background of that person. The person that cut you off. The person that's sitting with their screaming kid in their cart in front of you in that food aisle. And they're just annoyed. Thinking, shut the kid up already. Try to imagine the background of that person. Try to imagine what that person was taught as a child. Try to imagine the day or the week that person was going through. Kind of bad things that had happened. Allow yourself to get into their life. Mm. It's Brené Brown who said, people are hard to hate close up. This is the act of cultivating empathy, mm-hmm. compassion.
You know, the First Nations have a phrase for that. It's unless you walk a mile in my moccasins, right?
Yeah.
And I think that we've bumped into in working with First Nations this kind of get over it mentality, mm-hmm. like what's the big deal? Mm-hmm. And as we've gotten close and you have friends in that community, you start to empathize, you start to experience things and connect and have friendships and relationships, and the way of being completely shifts. Huh. So the compassion quotient for me today, I would say, is easier. Because of understanding, right? So if you know...
Because you've gotten that close.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you go to their communities and you realize, you know, they've been pushed up in the middle of nowhere for the last who knows how long.
Yeah.
And the fur trade taken away and nothing replaced. And so now there's this kind of like this fatigue that the culture has mm-hmm. without fully comprehending. So all those questions that you're asking really resonate with me because that... You know, you can see the struggles that they have just mm-hmm. raising their kids and, mm-hmm. you know, that their whole structure has been decimated. And so to have compassion, to have understanding is a huge piece around that.
How do you cultivate more compassion for yourself?
Whew.
Sorry, I didn't really chat about that, but I was just thinking, you know, it seems easy to be able to start developing empathy for others.
Well, I think, my frame of reference is I believe very powerfully that we need to forgive others and have compassion on ourselves. And so my focus would be, for all of us, how do we develop that compassion for ourselves? And I believe that, you know, it says to love yourself, right, before you love others. You can't truly love unless you love yourself. And I think that's having an accurate estimation. It's living consciously. Mm-hmm. I think a great part of it is recognizing where my ego gets in the way and being able to let that go. Mm-hmm. And so for me, as I live life unattached and with non-resistance, I'm able to love myself more. It's when I see my ego, which is why I believe that God gives us a wife, because, you know, true. I mean, like, I was the world's greatest driver until I met Carmen, and apparently that's not the case, you know. Apparently my ego gets in the way on occasion, and, you know, and I don't like it, because, you know, somebody will cut me off and it's like I'm chasing them down the highway and, you know, right, trying to get them back, and she goes, "You do know that's your ego, right?" And I'm going, "No." Oh, yeah. You know, it's that moment. And then, so once my ego's out of the way, then I can, like, I'm a nice guy. My ego's not in the way.
Right.
So it's awareness of that and cultivating
that. So the 11-week plan, as you're getting ready to be on the beach in 11 weeks.
Right.
Is there a strategy?
There's no
there
beach involved in this. This is right here in Calgary.
Right.
This is, yeah.
Right.
This is a suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we're covered up. But yeah, is that ego? I actually haven't thought about that.
Huh.
So, I mean, I could be fat and love myself at the wedding. That would be fine.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, maybe.
Well, hey.
Yeah.
Like, if we can't, if we can only love ourselves when we finally...
Right. So it's not about perfection, is what you're saying.
No.
So I can have the fries and love myself at the same time.
Yeah. Complexity there, right?
Yeah. Well, it's the, you know what it is? It's the amazing capacity to self-sabotage. Like, I can get hijacked like that, and I'm unconscious, and the amygdala kind of kicks in, and I'm hijacked, and I'm already down that road, and I don't even know it. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, my goodness, there I go again. Yeah. And when I catch myself in that moment, okay, you know, have compassion on yourself. Love yourself, because if I can love myself through that, then I get through it way faster. You know, spending time in self-pity and self-sabotage, those behaviors, yeah, that's not a healthy place.
We haven't talked a lot about the beauty of when you feel compassion for yourself. But I'm reminded of the day I remember having to finally fess up with Kathy. And I had played that out in so many different ways in my head. And finally said, "Kath, I think she was asking, like, where are the stocks? Where are stocks at? You haven't talked about it in a long time."
Mm.
Yeah, about that. And so I told her it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I still remember to this day her response. I said, "Kathy, like, a large chunk of our retirement got wiped out. Like, a large chunk." And somehow the conversation kind of got to this point, and I just remember her saying, "Well, I guess when that day comes, we might have to sell our house and move into a little holiday trailer." She says, "You always know I love camping." I could not believe in that moment that she could do that and say that and let me off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever felt what compassion, that feeling of compassion where someone who were expecting this and they give you something different. Can you just imagine if, as a community, we could wield compassion with such effectiveness? There's people in your life right now, they are desperate for that look that says, "It's all good."
So, Jeff, I wasn't planning on doing this, but let me share with the community here. No, it's a shared community. Good story.
Yeah.
Probably about 7 years ago,
shoot.
I was experiencing a lack of compassion from a lot of people because I had fallen morally. I used to pastor church, and my experience of a lot of church people was quite legalistic. And you and I went for coffee down to Memorial Drive, and that conversation was life-changing for me, that you showed me compassion. So, thank you.
That was not supposed to be in the script. That's...
Yeah, it works, buddy. Yeah.
When we get this right, when we get this art right, and I'm telling you, we got a long... I speak for myself. I got a long way to go. But if we can move the dial up even a little bit this week, I think Jesus stands up and claps for that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
So is there someone in your life that needs it this week? Is there someone, maybe it's even your best friend or your spouse or your kid? I got someone in my life right now. I know they need it. Mm-hmm. And I've been stingy with it because I'm trying to prove something. Mm-hmm. And I got to stop. Would you do something this week that would just let them off and give them what they need? We do this and we win.
Mm-hmm.
We're done. We can do this. Mm-hmm. May this community be a community that bleeds compassion.
Yeah.
That is continually helping people on the ropes. Telling them, all right, we move into a trailer then. Because we love camping. I don't know what that conversation looks like. You give that. Oh, it's the greatest gift. I'm going to pray and we're going to close. God, I'm grateful, first of all, for this notion. I don't know what you are necessarily, but I love this vision of this more than out there that looks on me with compassion, despite my failure. And it is a motivator for me to love in the same way. Help me to be more compassionate this week. Help this, for everyone listening, may we find the person. May we find the way of looking to their life and giving it. I pray sincerely for this. Amen.
Amen.
Amen.